you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Jay Dyer back on the show. He returns to discuss a recent talk he gave, Understanding Austerity, Managed Crises, and the Great Reset. Jay is a writer, researcher, and the author of Esoteric Hollywood and Esoteric Hollywood 2. His website is Jay's Analysis. Jay, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Hopefully I didn't break my foot. Toe is swelling up, hurt.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't take much to do that. So,
right.
So, well, this talk you gave, I thought it's very important now because we seem to be in a constant crisis, one thing or another. It's so odd because I remember just, well, it doesn't seem long ago, but the late 90s, the mid to late 90s, we were told that, you know, we had entered the new economy. It's a new era, technology. The tech boom, and we're entering a new era of just constant prosperity. I remember thinking it then. I said, "Oh, that sounds strange. So we've heard this before." I remember reading about the new economics of the early '60s, how the government had, with managed Keynesianism, had guaranteed eternal prosperity. Of course, 10 years later, we were in the stagflationary '70s, the oil bust or supposed oil shortages. We can get into that, how that was created. In the late 1920s, economists were talking about how sustained growth had been maintained. The stocks market was going to grow and go up and up and up, and there was prosperity for everybody just around the corner. Then there was the bust in 1929 and the Great Depression for the next 10, 12 years, and, of course, the World War. And we've talked, and you've talked about how all those events are kind of interconnected or related, these constant crises, economic dislocation, crises, then war, and geopolitical reorganization. So this is kind of what we're in now, I think. It's not just we're not just talking about a novel virus or a bad flu season or the controversy over a so-called vaccination. This is part of a bigger plan to reorder society. In fact, they admit that. The World Economic Forum admits that this is part of the Great Reset. But all these crises we see, pipelines not working, supply chains being disrupted by cyber attacks, are part of this false scarcity, austerity, and crises. An arc of crisis applied to the West. Mm. So I'll let you take it from there.
Well, yeah, essentially we have the poisoning of the well when it comes to, I guess you could say, our philosophy. The Bible, the West, Christianity. The idea is that it has produced all of these oppressive structures that rape nature, that rape the oppressed, the underclass. The whole story is that it doesn't work because it's all built on exploitation. And so we're told that it's just destructive. It's all chaos. It's toxic. The culture is toxic. The economic system is toxic. People of the West are toxic. And so there needs to be a reset. There needs to be a new system, a year zero. I was thinking about the different revolutions all the way back to Weishaupt, to the Marxists, the communists, the Bolsheviks, the Jacobins, right? The idea was we've got to have a year zero because everything is structured according to the oppressor-oppressed narrative. And ironically, if you listen to Klaus and you listen to World Economic Forum and these liberal elites, they're couching it in similar ways that, you know, we've been in this oppressive system. The future has got to be fair. It's got to be equitable. And it's got to all be redistributed. And if you read Klaus's books, that's what he says. He constantly talks about a more fair system, a more fair economics where things are distributed. And we have a new ethic that's given to us by the United Nations, by the elite themselves, which is their austerity ethic. And so, again, it's all couched in a guilt-based narrative that's promulgated by people who don't believe in right or wrong anyway. So there's no reason we should feel guilty even on their perspective. But it doesn't matter because it's not about logic. It's not about consistency. It's not about giving reasons for things. It's about the way O'Brien explains to Winston, the party tells you what's true. And it's true because the party says so. It's self-referencing authority. It's intentionally circular, viciously circular. But as Winston says to O'Brien, you got to understand that I don't care about what's actually true or false. All I care about is managing the perception of the masses. And so if you can convince the masses through climate change, the green agenda, Extinction Rebellion now, that eating meat is bad. And by the way, have you noticed that Klaus is a big proponent of this, as well as Bill Gates now, the vegan agenda, that you're bad because you eat meat. You're going to have to change everything that you do, your diet, your lifestyle, your economic system. Everything has to be reorganized. And that is what this Great Reset is. It's not a real great reset. It's the final revolution. It's bringing in the post-human world. And that's why the last third of Klaus's book is dedicated to the transhumanist technocracy. It has nothing to do with, you know, fixing the world's problems. I mean, unless you believe that fixing the world's problems is just getting rid of everybody. But that's essentially what they think. I just can't get past the fact how clear it's been made to me this last week that really Fauci, Gates, Klaus Schwab, these individuals are basically perfect analogs to the O'Brien character. I mean, they even act, talk, and say the things O'Brien says. It's quite amazing, really, especially given Fauci just said, if you disagree with me, you disagree with science. I am science, right? It just echoes O'Brien saying, Winston, I am truth. We are truth. The party is truth. There is no truth outside the party, and we are what we say what science is. It's not what you think it is, you say.
Yeah, along that line, I was watching a press conference, I guess, during the G7 meeting that just convened. And Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, of course, his father is an advocate of population reduction, has actually joked about viruses wiping out half of humanity. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, he had a book on that, apparently.
Yeah. this is the father of the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And he goes talking about building the post pandemic situation, which is lingering. They're extending lockdowns in the UK till a few more weeks, apparently, because of a new variant, mysterious variant. But he goes about building back. We must build back better. We must build back greener, fairer, with more. So how do you phrase? You go something like with more gender equity, and maybe build back. No, he goes. No, how do you phrase?
Yeah, I was on a show and somebody played the clip. I've forgotten who. I think it was Alex. Maybe Alex Jones played it. But yeah.
Yeah. Basically, like without that. Gender. But then he goes, we must build back more feminine.
Yes. Exactly. That's
so what? How do you get rid of gender distinction? Build back with less gender distinction. Whatever that means. then build back more in a more feminine way. Well, that's not gender neutral. Yeah, we must build back more gender neutral. And how does that work into that? I don't know what's going through his fevered mind anyway. Maybe because he just came back from his honeymoon from his third or fourth marriage. I don't know. But he goes, we must build back more gender neutral and build back more feminine. I thought, what?
Yeah, and these are the degenerates who all go to these bondage and BDSM clubs and whip people and do who knows what else. This is all just nonsense and lies and facade.
Yeah.
These are totally degenerates. And I was thinking about that this week because it reminded me of if you think through some of the technocrats and the philosophers of this new era that they're bringing in, if you look to Terence McKenna and the Psychonauts, pretty much most of the Psychonauts said things like that the new order that would come would be more feminine. It would be giving credence to the Gaia principle. That's in Marilyn Ferguson's book on the new, the becoming order, the Aquarian Conspiracy, which is not a conspiracy book, by the way. It's an open conspiracy. I think even H.G. Wells said this, right? A big part of the new order would be the feminization of all aspects of society. So, I mean, he's obviously just trying to score political points and talk liberal BS, but there is actually a component to the idea. Fritjof Capra makes quite a bit of this idea that we need to shift away, get this, from masculine things like reason, logic, mathematics, to feeling. Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Marilyn Ferguson had multiple chapters where she said future corporations are going to go on the basis of feelings, not on the basis of profits, not on the basis of the bottom line. Fact-based systems, because there's no facts, right? There's just whatever the party tells you. So, yeah, that's actually a subtle psychological warfare thing to take perceived oppressed groups, right? Whatever kind of minorities or women, and it everything is being kind of leveled and inverted via the oppressor-pressed narrative. Now, it used to be, of course, it was class warfare. There's still a little bit of class warfare when it's needed, between Antifa and the cops or Antifa and the 1% or whatever. But most of the time, the warfare, the oppressor oppressed is, the Caucasian middle class is the oppressor.
Yes.
And all of the other groups are the oppressed.
Because
that means everybody from black people to furries to pick any of the most disgusting, degenerate sexual perversions. And those are just the oppressed minorities, you see.
Yeah, of course, based laws have been, policies have been introduced actually to introduce, chicken hawks to pursue, go after kids and these things, promoting that stuff. Promoting this in schools and promoting it in children's television. They have Blue's Clues, this children's programming had a tranny character in it. This is for kids, how would that ever be considered appropriate? Any normal standards. But yeah, I mean, you appeal to emotion, emotivism, and of course that enables you to rule by fear easier. So you appeal to the emotion, you'll appeal to the feminine, and you don't have logic, you don't have, critical thinking. Therefore, you're much easier to carry out a COVID-19 agenda.
Well, and
full of contradiction and fear, right. No facts, yeah, just fear.
And I was thinking too, I mean, a lot of people that maybe kind of have some quasi-conservative sensibilities or, kind of some objectivity, maybe they watch Tucker Carlson and this kind of stuff, which is good. I mean, that's a step in the right direction, but they'll still ask these kind of questions like, well, why would they contradict themselves? Why would they do things that don't make sense? They're mystified by this, and it's the very thing Winston asks. Why do you do contradictory things? Why do I revise the history? Why do I make history contradictory? And why do you do all of these things? That freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength, and truth, and all this stuff. And basically, O'Brien says because it's a form of psychological warfare is more or less what he says. He says because that confuses you.
don't you see that getting you to accept contradictions, inversions, and things that are, it's not just gaslighting. It's also, it's just a means of throwing you off. Like it confuses you. And that's the purpose of it, is to confuse you. So people ask, you know, why are they doing this? Why is it so contradictory? It's intentional. That's the whole thing O'Brien explains to Winston at the end is, yeah, of course it's contradictory. It's meant to be on purpose.
Yeah, that's why not just because it's a degenerate thing, but the whole promotion of transgenderism by the entire power structure of the West.
Exactly.
Media, academia, you know, even medicine and, you know, law and the courts. Why is this being promoted? Well, it's to promote sort of this destroying male, female, and also promoting a degenerate agenda. But it also forces you to accept something that you know is not true, contradictory. It forces you to say 2 + 2 = 5. Yes, can I keep my job if I say 2 + 2 = 5?
Exactly.
You know, only problem is I'm an engineer. Is that good? Bridges are going to start to collapse.
My engineering. So how long will we be able to actually? That's what I keep wondering is, I mean, if you start applying these inversions to your actual job and the things that you do, society's going to collapse pretty quick because you can't build a bridge, right, when 2 + 2 = 5.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run fast computer systems when 2 + 2 = 5.
When language is intentionally divorced from reality.
Exactly.
You know, like when you're the so-called, you know, misgendering. As you're accused of misgendering if you don't engage in someone's deluded fantasy. Well. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you remember the very end of the book, he says that the revolution is complete when we finish the Newspeak dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a connection between the finality of the revolution and language being so controlled that you can't speak what's true or speak what is objectively, in fact, in reality, the case. And that's the point of the Newspeak. Right, in 1984, is that you're not allowed anymore to say something true, because if you could objectively come to truth, then Big Brother isn't the truth. You see, you can't have a family because that's a firewall and a limitation on the sphere of authority of the state. So just as much as the family has to be destroyed, so does language. And that's what O'Brien tells him at the end. So that's the end of the revolution, is when the language has been completely inverted and destroyed. And that's the scary part, I guess, of where we are today, is that that's what we see now, is that language literally means the opposite of what it's supposed to mean. And that's intentional.
Mm-hmm. We had a case here where a teacher was, put on administrative leave because he would not misgender somebody or use the gender of the student supposedly wanted, which is different from his biological sex. He sued and he got his job back. But the fact that the county would initially do that means it shows just how corrupt these institutions are.
Well, this is why relativism had to be promoted for so many decades. This is why the education system succeeded in taking the philosophical, cultural, an ethical epistemological relativism and inculcating all of the education structure with that there is no truth. Truth is whatever you want it to be and whatever you make it. And I mean, again, bringing it back to the psychonauts, I never really noticed until I read Terence McKenna say it, that if you look at radical gender theory, he kind of just mentions it in passing. He says something to the effect that the psychonauts were actually the beginning of that, because it was through all of their hallucinogenic trips and whatnot that they had acquired this postmodern notion that words are kind of magical, and you can just, since words kind of tell us what's going on in the external world in reality, and since we don't actually know what is reality and what's the external world, aka the Kantian rift that the Collins brothers talk about, well, then we can just change the words. And once you change the words, then you change people's perception. And just like O'Brien says, it doesn't matter what's externally, objectively the case. We don't care about that. O'Brien says what matters is controlling people's thought and perception, mind control.
Mm-hmm.
And so relativism, subjectivism are the beginning points of mind control. That's where you get people to that state where nothing is true. Then you just become a receptacle, a receiver, and a transmitter of total, you know, mind control information that the system basically downloads into you. Now, that's, if that sounds crazy just from, oh, you're, you know, the standpoint of watching media and the education system brainwashing you. Now they're going to the next phase where you will literally, this is going to sound crazy, but as a human being, you're going to become a receiver and transmitter, literally. I believe that's what they're trying to do, is they're doing experiments to see if they can mutate people to become transmitters and receivers in a literal sense. That's what this is all about, I think.
Well, I believe the person who was the head of Warp Speed, his main field of expertise was, you know, human to machine interface, brain interface with the machine.
Right.
Bill Gates talked about his, you know, his tattoo. And of course, Klaus Schwab has talked endlessly about the fusion of man and with machine and technocracy. Mm-hmm. This is inevitable. I don't know why it's inevitable. I don't know, you know, what position he holds, because they say so. It's rather arbitrary. It's inevitable. Okay. but yeah, they openly talk about it, you know, and obviously, you know, the trend with technology, getting everyone online and dependent on computers. And you know, this sets the whole society up for a collapse, because now we hear about, you know, cyber attacks, cyber warfare, and various, you know, they call it ransomware attacks. It's mysterious as the virus. And I guess it's as invisible as the virus. And we don't know what the true origins are, but these ransomware attacks, cyber attacks, can bring down, you know, production factories, pipelines, and cause all types of disruption in society. You know, society has been driven towards this consumer for the past century. They've promoted consumerism, and now they declared it unsustainable. But it can, apparently all this great technology they've unloaded onto us the past 50 years, this whole high tech thing, apparently the whole thing can be stopped with the click of a mouse. You know, so.
Yeah, which is all baloney, because, again, you know, you and I'm sure we remember Andrew Marshall, who was the Pentagon's R&D DARPA guy for a while. He wrote essays for Wired Magazine and you know, Pentagon warfare doctrine programs that were actually, one of those Wired essays was the basis for Die Hard 4 or 5, the one in the mid-2000s where Bruce Willis was having to fight a private, secret, backdoor NSA company, a firm that could literally, through the back doors, shut off anything in society. So I recommend people go back and watch that. I don't know. It's either 4 or 5, Terminator or Die Hard. I forget the name of it, but it's the one about the, you know, them shutting down the logistics for various, you know, things in society. I don't remember all the details. Many years since, but I did read at the time that the guys who wrote that screenplay had based it on Pentagon planner Andrew Marshall's doctrine of the future of basically everything being done in cyber and AI and drone. So, in other words, they didn't just know that; they also knew about the ProMIS type software, the backdoors.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that's how this. I mean, that's my assessment, is that this is obviously not some amorphous terror group. This is the very people who run the world using probably some kind of private NSA type firm that's able to shut things down via the back doors in all the tech, which we've known about for, of course, 20 years. So that's another aspect, yes, of this controlled chaos, managed crises, the managed and controlled shortage of resources. And this is an old, you know, Vladimir Lenin trick to cut off supply lines. It's just basic warfare, right? Mm-hmm. Cut off the supply lines to the enemy. And people can't figure out that the enemy isn't a foreign enemy. Now, there are foreign enemies, I think, that are involved in the operations which are intended to bring down this country. I do think that's true. That's what they're trying to do, bring down this country and integrate it further into the emergent global order, right? That's what the Great Reset is about. So you do this, right, through attacking the pressure points, the nodes in different areas of the social order. And of course, food production, food and energy are two obvious ones, right? If you can shut down food and energy, then the populace is done for. And so that's, and I'm not saying that they're intentionally shutting everything down, although they may do that. I think we've seen in 2020 that they're not beyond doing anything. They'll do whatever's necessary. And then, and to bring it back to the mRNA stuff, I think that I went back and watched a bunch of Body Snatcher movies, believe it or not. It's like, wow, this is really what they're trying to do. I think they're really trying to do experiments to see if you can basically attune people to different frequencies. I think they really want to turn people into better antennae. I mean, we know that the body itself is already a kind of ELF, VLF antenna. So, you know, has magnetic resonance and all that. And if you read Michael Aquino's psychological warfare doctrine document, that's actually a big portion of the end of the document, is that humans are antenna, you know, that basically our cells function like little antennae, and they can be manipulated, right? And this has been known for a long time. Brzezinski has a whole section in, you know, Between Two Ages, well, actually two sections, where he talks about humans as a mutation that can be influenced via signals, ELF, VLF signals, both to be agitated and to be calm and pacified. So he discusses towers being put up everywhere, literally, that can influence the attitudes and energy of entire people groups across continents.
They would never get away with putting towers up everywhere.
No, that doesn't exist. Right? yeah, exactly. Now, so when you go into, and again, this is not, you can say, oh, this is all, it's not all speculation, because granted, we don't know exactly what's going on in these, the recipe that's in these stabbies. So people are having to kind of postulate on the basis of what they can figure out, which we do have information, obviously, as I said, in Klaus's book. Now, Klaus says the idea is to mutate man to be more closely merged with tech. So he admits that there is a plan to mutate man. Jonas Salk admits there's a plan to mutate man. Arthur Koestler admits the plan is to mutate man to make him more congenial and more, I guess you could say, wired, right? So that tech can be more easily integrated into his body. And so, I mean, we have a family member who's now magnetized from the vaccine. That's true. If you know the who got the stabby, her arm is magnetized now. I have a family member, or I have a friend whose brother is now blind. We have another relative who is basically invalid or so now. So this is really happening. I'm not laughing to be callous, but it's just like, it's so wild that this is happening. And this suggests to me that it was a big pharma genome switch experiment. So they're basically using the spike protein as some kind of test. I think it's a big lab test. Rebecca Limov wrote that book from Harvard, World as Laboratory, where the attitude of the technocrats is that the entire globe is just a test tube. And so if that's the attitude, it's not surprising. And if they have Satanists writing the army's doctrine of psychological warfare, like Michael Aquino saying, we'll spray the atmosphere to saturate it with these different metals. We'll use the ELF, VLF technology to influence humans via frequencies. If we have Brzezinski, Aquino, and these people saying all this, do we think that somehow the people at the heads of these pharma companies don't believe the same thing? No, of course they do. They all believe this. And so this idea that a nanolipid particle, right, will basically retool the RNA is not far-fetched. And we don't know all the uses of the nanotech in regard to these vaccines. Now, one of our friends who has a friend that works for the State Department was told not to get the Moderna vaccine precisely because it has a nanotech tracking in it. And that, by the way, that doesn't mean, oh, okay, well, then the other two are good, right? Oh, just Johnson. No, I'm not saying that. In other words, they're all are just some crazy cocktail. So my idea is that this is just a version of some kind of nanotech that's an experiment to see what will happen and what they can do with, again, making humans more receptive and susceptible to these sorts of frequencies. And the frequencies are going to be important, right, when we get the next levels of the
generations of wireless technology in place. And in fact, that's not me, that's Klaus. Klaus says, for the Internet of Things, for the circular economy, for the ELF, VLF, and all of this to actually function, we've got to have the Skylink system in place. There's got to be basically 5G, 6G everywhere. And then my assumption is that humans have to also be made into more powerful antennae. That's the point.
Yeah, create almost like a biological mesh system.
Where, it is. Wherever you go. I think even Klaus uses some word like that.
Yeah. And I remember originally one of the reasons why, one of the many reasons why technocracy failed as an idea is that they lacked the information necessary to govern, regulate a society without things like a pricing system, like prices to allocate resources efficiently. And I guess they feel that with this sort of high-tech system where we're all antennae, sharing data with each other, that can supplant the pricing system. And you do away with the pricing system, then you don't need, in fact, you don't want small businesses, medium-sized businesses. You just need mega corporations, maybe a few with interlocking directors controlling everything. Yeah.
It's the implantation of nanotech AI into the body. So that the social credit system can function, and then and by extension then social engineering by what they call the circular economy.
Yeah, and the so social credit system supplants the currency. Yeah,
right. The future UBI social credit system, universal basic income, Klaus says, will be connected to your own daily activity, right? And the carbon allowances, you see. So that's why it's a planned-opolis. If you go back and watch those planned-opolis videos, it's the same idea. So basically, everything has to be interlinked into this alternate synthetic system. So there's a synthetic world that is going to be completely surveilled and tracked and traced. That's what requires all the tracking and surveillance so that it can all be in this basically synthetic copy world. And then in the synthetic copy world, everything is monitored and, oh, beep, 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 you've already had your ounce of meat this month. And we know because we know everything you do. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowed to have another ounce of meat this week. And you violated it, so you get docked your social credit payout, right? And that will all just be for a time period of experimentation, right? That's not being done because they're going to actually set up a utopia. That's being done for a time period until the next phases of the system come into play. And you have basically the collapsing of the West, probably big wars, to integrate everything into the real global government by 2050.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've conditioned everyone to accept this. With going online, with the so-called gig economy, these types of jobs where people are rated constantly for their performance.
Yes, that's the social credit system.
Yes, the social credit system, and you just that people getting adjusted to that. There's no organized labor in this situation. There's no
right. So everything is going. That's what they call. That's part of the circular economy, where everything is basically different apps that relate to different aspects of your life. So now, for example, there are apps that are, and I'm not knocking everybody who participates in this. I'm just like I'm not knocking anybody. I mean, I've used Uber before, but Uber is part of this because Uber is getting you ready for you not needing a car. You don't need a car. We'll have a shared village car that will be some kind of robot thing or something. But like in the Total Recall, right? That stupid taxi thing that drives them around.
Yeah.
That's the circular economy. And it's not just that. It's going to apply to clothes, too. So there are apps now where, remember the DoorDash or whatever, so you can eat somebody else's leftovers. You can ride other people's cars, and now there's apps for renting other people's clothes, believe it or not. So you can actually wear somebody else's clothes, and then you just pass that on to somebody else. Now, kind of, it sounds like, oh, yeah, because capitalism in the West is wasteful. It's a wasteful society. But that's only true in a very limited, not full picture sense. Yeah, there might be waste, but we live in this monopoly capitalist system, which is
highly controlled, highly based around, you know, planned obsolescence and this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's highly based around controlling the markets, shutting down competition and so forth. So point being is that what they're attacking is just another earlier instantiation of the system. So people are thinking we've got to move away from, you know, competition and markets where we're trying to build better and do. No, it's about sharing. It's about fairness. It's about equality. It's not about owning things. And this is where they condition the millennials to accept tiny living, tiny houses, coffin apartments. That was all intentional.
Yeah, this is being preached by people or people who work for people who own hundreds of thousands of acres of land in multiple states. And
palaces. Yachts, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
20, 30-year-old, nothing, and you'll be happy. You better
be
happy.
Well, it's like when Winston walks into O'Brien's, got this palatial, fancy office with, mm-hmm. like, expensive drinks and you know, like, caviar like all this. And he's like, I guess you just get those perks if you're at the highest levels of the party. But it's, I mean, it should be obvious that it's not, it's a lie, right? I mean, pretty much every communist dictator has, you know, lived in a freaking palace and had.
Yes, a Dhaka. So
it's kind of ridiculous.
Zia limousines and access to Western goods and
sure.
These things. But during that, yeah. So it was always a lie there. But the idea of sort of a managed crisis, a sort of a false crisis, there's been, you know, a lot of examples. Most recently, of course, the whole COVID-19 thing with the shutdown of the economy, sort of this they substituted it with relief checks, put everyone, millions of people out of work. But now you have a situation where you have a lot of shortages, there's disruptions in the labor market because people are being paid more not to work than to work, and then the companies are finding difficult to get people back to work because they've been paid not to work. And all this is, I think, is intentional. It's not like they're not stupid, you know. And so they know they when they shut the economy down in the district over a contrived crisis, a fake crisis, you know, the supposed pandemic, which never was a real pandemic, just a declared pandemic. They're not that stupid. They know what they're doing. I mean, a good example of a kind of a false crisis would have been like the 1973 oil embargo and oil, so-called oil shortage in the 1970s that was completely created by the
Bilderberg and OPEC.
Yeah, OPEC and Kissinger. But Americans thought they were running out of oil. Movies made about running out of gasoline.
Yep.
but it turns out that wasn't the case. You know, this was a plan to raise the price of oil 400% overnight, and over the course, I think within 6 years, it had gone up 1,300% the price of energy. This was a plan to throw the third world into debt and stop industrial production in the third world, create the debt crisis, and also to, according to Kissinger's National Security Study Memorandum 200. To decrease the population of the so-called developing world through hunger and through forced, you know, population control measures like contraceptives. Wrote about this, right. You know.
Yeah, I think people don't even understand that the guiding operative system is Malthusian. Mm-hmm. People still haven't grasped that yet, but it's not just Malthusian. It's also now technocratic, and it's the idea that we'll remove humans from the equation and from the decision-making process to basically avoid human error and human weakness.
Yes.
So the reason they think that this is a superior system is precisely that there won't be, you know, some guy sitting there having doubts about, you know, bombing somebody in another country via his, you know, remote control video game drone program that he's running. It's just going to simply be AI. And the AI will make the decision, not so much on the basis of Middle Eastern people. It's going to be making, there have been drones flying around killing people like us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they want to, now, maybe not tomorrow, but, you know, when you read people like, you know, Klaus or Jacques Attali, I mean, they give dates like 2040, 2050 is when they would like to have those kinds of programs. Now, we've already seen the Air Force, by the way, put out documents like 10 years ago that,
by 2025, right, the Air Force had the plan to be completely AI and drone run. So this is all already kind of publicly out there. It's not even, you know, it's not hidden. It's not, but people don't know about it. There was that recent future warfare talk, I think it was given at NASA, that quite a few people have picked up on, and they related it to the CUFID and all this nonsense, and also to future forms of warfare. And it includes stuff like this too, AI, drone. It includes all the stuff I was saying about psi warfare. It includes the mRNA stabby antenna stuff in it. I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. This pretty lengthy NASA lecture. I forget who gave it. Some NASA person on the future of warfare. Are you familiar with this?
Not that specifically. I know that's where they've been going with it.
Yeah, it's just another one of these kind of testaments to the tech stuff, the technocratic stuff, except that this one was a little more kind of like out there. Like, it was saying some pretty wild stuff. Not that NASA's reliable, but it's just another basically attestation to this program. And it included the mRNA and the microchipping. So that's why I think this recent talk was relevant. I mentioned in one of my videos on the stabbies, I forget the name of the so-called, it was a NASA Air Force like lecture that was given by some guy about future warfare. That was really wild. But I mean, it literally includes, you know, all the stuff from what we're talking about with the manipulating the genetics, the genome, making them more amenable to frequencies, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you remove the human element out of it, because the human element is not totally predictable, where AI, at least they think, is predictable and controllable, completely controllable. But the whole idea of some of these, the average American Joe normally looks at some of these crises, they say it's the typical baby boomer, or remember the gas lines. I'm old enough to remember the gas lines of the mid-70s, early to mid-70s. I was a little boy, yep. But I remember waiting in line before going to school, getting gas on Tuesday, not on Wednesday, these things. Is the type of disruption, the amount of frustration and fear and disruption that Americans felt who become used to cheap, accessible energy. All that was completely unnecessary, but Americans looked at it as something as the world spinning out of control. And this all demoralized the country, led to the stagflation of the 70s, the Carter administration, and these things. But the idea that this was orchestrated by their, you know, by the Secretary of State, Secretary, you know, the National Security Advisor, the Ford, you know, the Nixon and Ford administration, working with these elites, is right. Never reported to the Americans. It's not. William Engdahl wrote about it, and he describes it. But just right. Look at how it went down. Is this supposedly this was done because the United States backed Israel in the Yom Kippur War, and so then OPEC imposed an embargo suddenly, raising the price of oil, causing shortages. But at the very same time, this is happening where OPEC is sticking it to the Americans, supposedly, as if OPEC was independent. How many divisions did OPEC ever have, right? That's the question you have to ask yourself. And Kissinger is negotiating the petrodollar system. But if OPEC is sticking with the Americans, why are they negotiating a deal to only sell their oil in U.S. dollars, which can only bolster the Americans? Yeah, so it doesn't make any sense. There's a contradiction there.
I remember there being something about how this was to give us the edge in the sense that the petrodollar would have preeminence. But I mean, that was just for a time. Mm-hmm. Not that that, you know, Kissinger was there to like save America or something like that. No. It was to bring in this stage or this phase of the dollar having supremacy.
Yes.
And then by doing that, since the dollar at that very same time was divorced from the gold standard, mm-hmm. the elite could then take it to the next level with the money printing and with, you know, all the debt mm-hmm. and basically buy up the world.
And what debt really is, debt sets up a perpetual rent-seeking situation. That's what usury is, right? You just constant debt buildup. And then with the money you print, you loan out, the collateral are the real resources, you know, the world. Right. And that's what they did with the third world is they stopped industrial production, threw it in the debt, and you had the debt crisis. And then, of course, that creates the sort of the instability and the migration crisis. And at that point, now you can play sort of arbitrage with humanity, which they've done since the 80s and 90s with cheap labor. And you also financialize the Western economies, deindustrialize it. This sets up the China plan, the China model. And then you undermine, you know, the labor unions in the West. You move production out. You create this sort of over-financialized economy, which is then you can take it to the new level with the 90s and the aughts, you know, with the housing crisis, the bubble.
Yeah, right. You know. Wasn't the shock doctrine right around the same time as this?
Yes.
Oil scam.
Yeah. And that's all part of shock doctrine, these things. And you can exploit a crisis, bring about a crisis. But again, the biggest problem that again that Americans have is understanding that their governments and their institutions, their corporations are doing this to them.
You know? Right. I think that's one of the number one things that normies don't get is that the government is not there to fix crises. In fact, this is actually a point O'Brien makes to Winston, which is that there is no end to the revolution. He says that the revolution and the war is meant to be continuous. The crisis is meant to be continuous, he tells Winston, because that's one of the key ways that the population is kept in a state of perpetual agitation and just sort of deferring to the authority of Big Brother. Mm-hmm. So, no, the government's not there to fix the crises. The government's there to manage crises or start crises and steer them in the direction that the shadow government wants.
Yeah, basically, yeah, it's ruled by fear, ruled by crisis, problem, reaction, solution.
Correct.
Yeah. And one of the things I think a lot of people have trouble understanding is the role of corporations in this and how it isn't really the government that's censoring people. It's not the government that right. is leading the charge. I mean, through legislation, you know, proposed laws or new regulations in bringing about the new normal of the green economy, it's corporations that are doing this. And the when you look at the corporations have a thing called an ESG, it's environment, social values, and governance. And it's where these corporations sign on to these various environmental ideas, whether it's Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030, the green economy. They decide how to invest their resources. And a good example how it's orchestrated through these investment houses, these risk management financial firms like BlackRock or Vanguard or State Street, I think collectively own about $20 trillion in assets. And so a handful of people are deciding how the world's capital is invested, and they've decided to promote the green economy.
Yeah, it's collectivism, and yeah. I mean, excuse me, it's oligarchy. And funny thing again, right? Doesn't what's the title? Do you remember the title of Emmanuel Goldstein's book?
No, what was that?
So in the story, right? Goldstein, who's the so-called terrorist,
yes,
counter-revolutionary. He's written a book that's passed around secretly, and it's called The Theory of Oligarchical Collectivism.
Okay, yeah.
Now, right. What's ironic is that capitalist oligarchical control is really no different than Soviet communist oligarchical control, because they're all oligarchic systems, mm-hmm. right? And that's why, again, who runs the country? Well, the private banks do, right? The Federal Reserve is not a public bank. It's not a state-owned bank. It's a private bank. And so when we understand that there's private shareholders of these national yes. banks, and then when we understand that the private shareholders are basically tied into a giant international private bank known as the Bank for International Settlements and so forth, then we can understand that the world's economy is run by these, as you said, small number of controlling interests and private shareholders. And in fact, there was that Swedish, I think it was a Swedish study from 10 years ago that somebody, they did a TED talk about this, right? That you can basically sway the entire global economy because of the small number of controlling share interests that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So that's actually been proven definitively that is the case. So the world economy is literally steered by those controlling interests that you're talking about.
And
it's proven now by data modeling that they can show you how these top shareholding companies can do this and asset firms.
Yeah, and the idea, of course, the central banks were created by sovereign governments. They give a monopoly over the creation of money, the flow of capital, which then has been controlled by a few, very few exactly. families who right. secretly, I mean, we talked the Jekyll Island meeting in the United States, but this is all part of the their connection, you know, tying back to the City of London, the creation of the Bank of England,
right.
to creating this string of global banks that are all under the Bank of International Settlements. There's Mark Carney, who was the former head of the Bank of England, now heads created the Institute for Sustainable Investing and the Partnership for Carbon Accounting and Financial, PCAF. So they're
right.
steering all investment that way. They're going to penalize companies that aren't green and invest in companies that are green. One common denominator you see this will result in a huge spike in the cost of energy, which will lower production, which will lead to the impoverishment and miseration of humanity, much lower living standards for people. But it's interesting that Mark Carney himself got the central banks behind the plan. Now, if the central banks are behind the green agenda, then it doesn't matter what your governments are doing, because the central banks control ultimately the finances of supposedly sovereign governments. So if central banks are meeting in secret to decide, consequential policy for humanity, there's no one's covering. It's like Bilderberg or World Economic. No one really covers substantively what goes on there. You get more news out of what happens at the NFL draft than you do what's done really said at the World Economic Forum or Bilderberg or something. But we know how important it is because it's the World Economic Forum which spearheaded, the whole COVID scam. Right. They organized it, and you can do the schematic connection between the World Economic Forum, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi, Imperial College of London, and all these other right. sustainable education institutions. The media, they all interlocked and they connect and they coordinate to create the agenda, to control the narrative, to impose the agenda. And this goes back to the whole idea of the billionaire sort of being a magus. They can create reality with the control of the media.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and the back and forth, controlled crises and dialectics, all of that serves many functions. It serves as a distraction. People get caught up in, the latest, shooting or scandal or whatever. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, all that's going on in the background to move everything into this austerity circular economy. And you look at the people who are sort of the propagandists for this, like that Nordic or Swedish woman that Tristan's always citing, Ida Alkin, and she gives her talks about explaining how it's going to be circular and how you won't own anything. And the only companies, as you said, that are going to go into the future and benefit from this are the megacorps and the corps that are part of the green agenda, because mm-hmm. it has nothing to do with markets and competition. It just has to do with control. And that's why, again, it doesn't matter if it's communist collectivism or if it's corporate collect, it's the same system. It's the exact same. It's no different, because it's and that's what was so kind of wild about Klaus this week. I don't remember if it's an old clip or what, but people were playing Klaus Schwab clips, and he was saying the future system is the merging of capitalism and communism. I mean, that's the third way. That's mm-hmm. what they had always said would be the plan. So here's Klaus literally saying that it's the merging of the capitalists and the socialists. Literally saying the third way.
Yeah, and there's nothing that you have to say about it, or nothing that you can do about it.
You'll like it. You'll own nothing. You'll eat bugs, and you'll like it.
Well, we hear, if you take a political science course, a political philosophy course, a government course at high school, college, I don't know if they do this anymore, but you'd hear about, Montesquieu and the division of powers, or the Madisonian mm-hmm. constitution, the importance of faction checking faction and the division of powers and accountability. But this, the problem is when you have the metapolitics that are controlled by these handful of corporations that are all interlocked, and they meet and they strategize, and they're apparently coordinating this. What? there's a governance issue here that's facing Western civilization and humanity, because these people are completely unaccountable, and not as if these corporations apparently won the game because they were more efficient, their economies of scale, and they won the race. Is they've been able to scheme to get certain political favors and benefits they've been heavily subsidized or capitalized by the illegal drug trade. That's big. You hear about that. Catherine Austin Fitz talks about that on Wall Street. Yep. But good example, brings up the whole COVID scam. Last winter, it was 2020, early 2020, when supposedly the economy collapsed because of COVID, when it turns out that actually months before, central bankers had met in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and talked about going direct to save the financial markets, the repo market. And going direct means it's no longer going through the treasury. They're just going to pump money into the market, buy up toxic assets. And that decision was made in August 2019. You had the COVID crisis, which created the pretext for the huge $6 trillion bailout, the primary beneficiary of which was BlackRock, who was going to bar this entire thing. Larry Fink and this well-connected investment house or risk management firm, they call it. They're given $6 trillion to leverage. And then
this is just like, remember 10 years ago when the IMF did all of this, the fire sale stuff in Europe, and they would just bankrupt the countries. Everything would be dirt cheap to pay off these impossible loans and the interest, and then private interests come in and just buy everything up.
Yeah. And now BlackRock's coming, they're buying up huge swaths of residential real estate, houses. I hear entire developments and other, I think Vanguard's doing this. They've been given, they're given free house money or free money to play with to buy a property, and they're paying 20-25% more of market rate for houses, buying it up because they're doing it with funny money.
Yeah, that's in did you ever watch Sopranos?
Yes.
There's I think it's season 2 or 3. Do you remember this?
The HUD scam?
The HUD scam.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I remember watching it. I was like, hey, this is what Catherine Austin Fitz talks about. Here's Tony Soprano's doing the very thing Catherine Austin Fitz.
Yeah, she tells a story that she was talking about HUD, because she was Assistant Secretary of HUD. She saw the hundreds of billions that HUD was losing in the 80s and 90s. And tried to report on it. Of course, she has a whole story about that. And of course, Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, came from HUD. She was telling a story where she would tell people about this. No one would believe her. And then finally, they watched The Sopranos. They called up and they believed it now because they saw it on The Sopranos.
Yeah, I noticed watching through The Sopranos, if you just pay attention, you really could figure out how it all works. I mean, I know you and I have talked, the first interview we did was about Godfather and how the Godfather shows how the world really works.
Yes.
Well, if you want an even more detailed, fictional insight, watch Sopranos and just magnify that on a macro scale, and you'll understand that the world is, how did Alan Watt put it? The world is run by a bunch of con artists, the big boys, right? So the world is actually run by con artistry, and conology is crucial to seeing how the global system works.
Well, I mean, I think this past year just proves that. I think they did everyone a big favor because they made it so obvious. I was telling my daughter, it used to be very hard to explain to people what was going on, but now it's so obvious.
Yeah, they just run big level scams over and over, and people believe it. And, lately, right, we've been even hearing a lot of, I know we weren't really scheduled to get into this tonight, but, I'm surprised at the prevalence of the alien nonsense. And so I think the Collins brothers put their book out at an appropriate time. And that chapter 7 is really excellent, which deals with all this alien nonsense. And it was, don't forget, Klaus and the World Economic Forum have been promoting the alien stuff. Mm-hmm. They've been saying that you're going to see. How does he know all this, by the way? Like, how does he know the cyber attacks are coming? How does he know there's going to be austerity, right? Like, does he have a crystal ball? I mean, maybe people might ask these kinds of questions, right?
Well, it's all about creating a crisis, fear, and alien invasion. And it's all I interviewed him just a couple of weeks ago on that chapter. They sent me their book.
Yes. Right.
And it's the chapter itself is like a book. Because the book's very big.
It's like 150 pages.
Yeah, it's reading this book. It's just a long chapter. But he points out why they would do this and the alien deception. And it's a great distraction, of course. But it also, it sets people up to believe anything.
Well, but also this specific deception seems to be very amenable to, right, a engineered world religion.
Yes.
Co-opting and sort of steering people into
accepting narratives that fit with Darwinism, that fit with, you know, all the technocracy, right? All this stuff.
The aliens are always androgynous and they're advanced. So in order for us to advance, we must go move towards androgyny too, because the male female is just a definition for conflict, right?
Yeah, it fits with the transhumanism, the trans, all the trans psyop stuff for
even
sure.
Feminism, which has created, you know, much more enmity between male, female. And then, of course, the whole engineering of the economy, where you know, people, the claim of feminism is always, we just want to give women a choice. A choice. That's all. Choice in these things.
Well,
just choice.
But I didn't realize it until that chapter, that when they talked about the connection of we don't know if it's that C.D. Jackson, but I suspect it is, that he was connected to that. There's a C.D. Jackson listed as connected to the production team of The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's, of course, the doctrinal warfare guy. And then I didn't even realize Daryl Zanuck, right?
Yeah,
he basically just told the Office of Wartime Intelligence, use 20th Century Fox Studios for whatever propaganda you want.
Yeah.
So that was pretty wild.
Yeah. And it's, again, what they do is they'll say they'll create, you know, freedom, equality in these things. They'll claim that that's all lending towards that. But at the same time, they set up a situation, sort of the material conditions, economic conditions, where even if someone wants to be traditional, they can't, because men are all emasculated, women are all, you know, turned into, you know, raging harpies, and the economy doesn't support, you know, not as if wage can raise a family. So
kids,
so much for choice. And then they shut the economy down and tell everyone they go on Tinder. You know, Dr. Fauci, this man of science, suggested that, you know, they create a toxic culture where that can't even be sustained anymore. Well, what can you do? It's the free market, right?
Yes, it's the commodification of every aspect of life, right? Not just human beings, it's commodities. And back, and it's not really commodities anymore, but when I was reading some of the international agreements between, this blew me away, the Veterinarian Association and other global entities had signed, with the UN, had signed these different treaties and pacts to legally classify humans as animals. This sounds crazy, but I went and looked it all up. It's true. It's so legally, in terms of UN law, with the International Veterinarians Association, humans are basically classed as another one of the animals that, so your doctor is basically your vet. Okay. I'm serious. I couldn't believe this, but the legal classification, and somebody had pointed out, I think about 10 years ago too, that, you know, the Cornell Law Code reads, it says, humans and other animals is how they classify men or humans legally. Humans and other animals, which could be interpreted to mean, well, humans are just one of the many classes of animals, right? And so if animal testing is legal, humans and other animals, it makes human testing legal, supposedly, right? Supposedly this is, you know, the case. It looks like, I mean, I'm not a legal lawyer type of person, so I can't tell you the veracity of the legal status of these claims, but at least when you look at these documents, it reads that way. It could be interpreted that way. And certainly the elite view us like lab rats. I don't see why they wouldn't just put it into law that humans are basically classed as, you know, as animals.
They've crushed that threshold with the COVID vaccine.
Yeah. So then that's why the mRNA
experiments,
there's nothing even illegal about it, because they just pass a law that says, well, yeah, but animal testing is legal and you're an animal. So.
Yeah, I like that. And then, of course, then again, do animals have the ability to classify in themselves? It's like, no, that's point. Uniquely human. Oh, well, there is a difference then.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah.
Because animals don't stick around saying we're animals. They just don't think in those terms. They don't think in, you know, they.
Well, yeah, but it's whatever the party says is true. So
yeah,
You're doing Winston logic. And
sorry.
There's no logic outside of the party. So.
Yeah, the capacity for language is a big distinction. That and the opposable thumb, but I guess. And oh, wait, the soul. Oh, we don't want to go there. So
there is no soul. There is the no soul has to be stamped out.
That's right. But there is singularity, right? For the few.
Yeah, right. So. Well, there's also multiple, you know, universes where dragons and all these things are real, but there's no God. So
there was an interesting, this was a, I ran across this article by William Engdahl, talking about a sort of a managed or contrived crisis out in California. California crisis man-made, where has the water gone? And this is can have a profound impact because agriculture is so important. You hear a lot what's going on with the food. And, of course, we go back to, you know, whoever controls food controls nations, as right. Kissinger wrote in National Security Study Memorandum 200. So that's always been on, in their sights. They want to control the flow of food, to control populations, that and energy. But California, has always been a big energy and food producing state. Mm-hmm. It's also one of the craziest states in the union now. Cultural. Sure. That's all part of that old part of that cultural destabilization, which is all part of managed crises. But he goes
California
here.
California is a giant test tube.
It really is.
It's a giant cult, somebody said one time. I thought that was good. Might have been John Adams.
I did a whole thing in California with John Adams. Talking what they've exactly. gone. The water crisis in California is far the most serious in terms of consequences for the food supply in a period when the U.S. faces major supply chain disruptions owing to absurd corona lockdowns combined with highly suspicious hacks by key infrastructure. Again, I would say all those are contrived, created. They weren't inevitable. They were created by the very people who were supposedly trying to solve those problems. On May 31st, the infrastructure of the world's largest meat processor, JBS SA, was hacked, forcing the shutdown of all its beef plants that supply almost a quarter of American beef. Now, of course, this is not in the article, but JBS also is a big investor in artificial meat, by the way. So there we go. Again, they can, these corporations control what we eat, what we wear, and maybe what we think. The Green Lobby is asserting, while presenting no factual evidence, that the global warming, i.e. increased CO2 man-made emissions, is causing the drought. The NOAA examined the case and found no evidence, but the media repeats the narrative to advance the Green New Deal agenda with frightening statements such as claiming the drought is comparable to the worst mega drought since 800 CE. After 2011, California underwent a severe seven-year drought. The drought ended in 2019 as major rains filled the California reservoir system to capacity. It's very important. According to the state water experts, the reservoirs held enough water to easily endure at least a five-year drought. So that's 2024. Yet 2 years later, the administration of Governor Newsom is declaring a new drought and threatening emergency measures. What his administration is not saying is that the State Water Board and the relevant state water authorities have been deliberately letting water flow into the Pacific Ocean. Why? They say to save two endangered fish species that are all but extinct. One, a rare type of salmon. The second, a Delta smelt, a tiny minnow-sized fish of some 2 inches size, which has all but disappeared. In June 2019, Shasta Dam, holding the state's largest reservoir as a keystone of the huge Central Valley Project, was filled to 98% capacity. So as 2 years ago, it was 98% capacity. Just 2 years later, in May 2021, Shasta Lake Reservoir held a mere 42% capacity, almost 60% down. Similarly, in June 2019, the Oroville Dam Reservoir, the second largest, held water at 98% capacity, and by May 2021 was down to just 37%. Other smaller reservoirs saw similar drops. Where is all the water gone? Allegedly to save these fish varieties during the just 14 days in May, according to Christy Diner, a California water expert and farmer. 90% of Bay Area Delta inflow went to the sea. So they dump 90% of the water into the Pacific Ocean. It's equal to a year's supply of water for 1 million people. Diner has been warning repeatedly in recent years that water is unnecessarily being let out to the sea as the state faces a normal dry year. She asks, should we be having water shortages in the start of our second dry year? No. Our reservoirs were designed to provide a steady five-year supply for all users and were filled to the top in June 2019. In 2008, at the demand of the environmental groups such as the NRDC, a California judge ordered the Central Valley Water Project send 50% of its water reservoirs to the Pacific Ocean to save an endangered salmon variety, even though the NGO admitted that no more than 1,000 salmon would likely be saved by the extreme measure. So for 1,000 lousy fish, they did this. In the years 1998 to 2005, estimated average of 49% of California managed water supply went to what is termed environment, including feeding into streams and rivers to feed estuaries in the Bay Area Delta. Only 28% went to directly to maintain water, to maintain agriculture water supplies. This past January, Felicia Marcus, the chair of the California State Water Resources Control Board, who oversaw the controversial water policy since 2018, left at the end of her term to become an attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, one of the most powerful green NGOs, with a reported $400 million in resources to wage legal battles to defend endangered species such as the California salmon and Delta smelt. So now we're seeing environmentalism used to achieve this agenda. Nothing new really there. Appointed by the Green Governor Jerry Brown as chair of the State Water Board in 2018, Marcus is directly responsible for draining of the reservoirs into the oceans after they filled in 2019 using the claim of protecting endangered species. In March 2021, Marcus, as attorney, the NRDC requested the State Water Resource Council Board Marcus headed until recently take immediate action to address perceived threats to listed salmon in the Sacramento River watershed from the Central Valley Project. This is the state is facing a new drought emergency. In 2020, Gavin Newsom, a protege of Jerry Brown, signed Senate Bill 1, the California Environmental Public Health and Workers Defense Act, which would send billions of gallons of water out to the Pacific Ocean, ostensibly to save more fish. It was a cover for manufacturing the present water crisis, and specifically attacking farming, as incredible as it may seem. So agriculture seems to be the target here. We see a lot with Bill Gates buying up land. They're destroying the agriculture in California. We heard reports that the Biden administration was cutting off subsidies to farmers if they didn't cut production. So here we have an all-out war on agriculure. Inexplicably, they're dumping of this water in the Pacific Ocean, denying California agriculture. That's what this whole system was designed to do. So it appears that the people in charge to maintain the system, to look out for the welfare of the state, are working. And the fact that you bring in these NGOs and the environmental groups who are controlled by whom. I no doubt if you drill into that, you'll find support from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, George Soros, the usual suspects. Again, this is a network they use, again, to change the material conditions, create a crisis, and then they're going to come in to solve it, or supposedly to solve it with a new agenda, whether it's Agenda 2030 or the new normal, these things, because they can't have these legacy systems like independent farmers, food distribution systems perduring if they're going to impose, fake meat and, bugs in our diet,
Well, Tim, I'm going to have to say it sounds like the plot of a certain Jack Nicholson film.
Chinatown. This sounds like Chinatown, right, where you have the only thing missing in the Chinatown plot was the green agenda. But if you just watch another movie, Quantum of Solace, you can see where they do the same thing with water. Mm-hmm. And the Bond villain there, Mr. Green, he's actually called Mr. Green, sets up a fake water shortage, an austerity situation. And he says for the climate and for the environment, he's going to have to take over all the water in a certain region somewhere in Latin South America. But the point is that they have a really good, water source there. And so basically he creates a water shortage on purpose to buy up and control that entire aquifer and all the water in that mm-hmm. country, basically. So he's basically cornering the market on water. And he does that via a staged water crisis. So, this is a classic elitist scam where you create a controlled austerity crisis that's not real. And then you offer the solutions to the problem that you caused. It's a fake crisis.
Yeah, I think Maurice Strong tried to do that.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
In Canada and Montana, I think. There was a huge aquifer they tried to privatize. What you're looking at is sort of a systematic dismantling of one of the most productive agriculture regions in the world, using environmental protection as the excuse. Of course, this fits into the larger, Davos, agenda, Great Reset, UN Agenda 2030 with sustainable agriculture. they declare agriculture unsustainable by what? Stealing all the water,
Yeah, this is what pretty early on in the CUFID nonsense of last year, I did a video or two on how it was basically at that time
the best we could tell, I said that this is an economic attack. Mm-hmm. The Corona situation is a consolidation of economic interests, basically. And we remember all the box stores, right, that were basically putting all of the medium-sized businesses out of business, and they were literally the only ones allowed to stay open. Mm-hmm. That was all part of a consolidation scam, and then it came out that what Bezos and all these people, basically Bill Gates, they basically made triple their profits that year, 2020. So the billionaires profited tremendously from all of this. You can see this also, by the way, with what Elon has done in the last several months through Bitcoin. So Elon pretended, at least initially, to be interested in Bitcoin, and then came out as a person attacking Bitcoin because it wasn't green. Interesting. Bill Gates also has attacked Bitcoin because it's not green. Mm-hmm. Now, whatever your views on Bitcoin, the point is that this is another area where they're doing the same sort of attack, right? They're trying to create FUD, fear, uncertainty, doubt. They want to destabilize those markets. They want to give the impression that you know, this is not the future. This is all hurting the environment and all this nonsense. It's all just gibberish. It's all nonsense. But it's more so a war of perception because people, unfortunately, believe it. And in the case of, you know, Bitcoin, Elon was able to basically drive the price down quite a bit mm-hmm. over the last several months. So that's a window into what they do across the markets. They do this all over the markets. And the whole green thing is just basically an economic warfare tactic. It's an attack on the people.
Yeah, and of course,
that's the entire green thing.
Yeah, Greta Thunberg, the would-be Joan of Arc of the green movement, she's promoted by Klaus Schwab in the World Economic Forum. This silly girl that we're supposed to listen to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, she's actually retarded.
Yes,
and yeah. We're supposed to follow. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable, but. Yeah, so exactly. That's
she,
how it works.
Was she game. Times Person of the Year?
She was.
not as if Time Magazine matters. You know, I think last year was, or this year, or was two people. It was Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. So they don't understand. Person of the Year were two people. Because one year was a personal computer, so I don't know what the... yeah, you know, but yeah, and again... It goes back to, again, how this all these things are being staged. I mean, I think Whitney Webb has written about, what was it, Polygon? This
Cyber Polygon.
Cyber Polygon, the stage. Oh, that's convenient. Now they're going to be staging this, and now they're talking about it. And just like with Event 201 right. In the fall of 2019, when they wargamed or the tabletop exercise a global pandemic, and 2-3 months later it happens. Whoa, they're so prescient. How is
and
this?
We don't know. I wonder who was behind it.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been like at gatherings and I kind of laid it out, the connections and all this stuff. They're like, well, what are you, conspiracy theorist?
Okay, so is every detective who like follows the lead a conspiracy theorist? That's ridiculous.
A prosecutor will make connections. They'll do a schematic.
Exactly. How could anybody ever be convicted of a crime if there wasn't a lead, right? If there wasn't a theory.
So I was like, well, it's almost like right in your face, you know. And then
that's part of it. They put it in the face, man. Yeah. It's a you know, great place to hide things is in public view.
Yeah. Well, I when I first started, I was like, this is a financial coup.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and you know, they collapse the market, then they come in, and then they're given money to pump it up again, and they make money, and then at the same time they destroy what remains of, you know, whatever competition remains. In the mainstream economy, they destroy through just a boot on everyone's neck, a lockdown, right. You know, and then that destroy, then all that business goes to, you know, Walmazon. There's a global economic collapse, and the billionaires double their wealth. How does that work? You know, that's a huge wealth transfer operation. You know.
Yeah.
You know. But that's what all this, that's all these, it gets back to, again, gets back to the whole idea of managed crises.
Yes.
You know, is.
And remember, the managed crises are stages in, mm-hmm. Steps in a consistent, coordinated plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other point that people are kind of missing when it comes to the global elite books is if you doubt that it's planned out to that degree, then just remember that between Operation Lockstep, Clade X,
Crimson Contagion, Spars, and Event 201. I mean, those are five examples of war games, of scenarios that really clearly, right, planned out 2020 and afterwards.
Yeah, Spars foresees reactions to the to the jab, right?
Absolutely.
And politicians getting blamed for it, you know. And
exactly. Yeah, the CDC heads and idiot politicians take the blame. Bill Gates and company are immune.
Yeah, and so then that delegitimizes government, which takes us takes us closer to that sort of the technocratic.
Yeah, the global. International unelected private corporate technocratic boards, right, will make the laws, not the, you know, local unsophisticated rube governments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, the agencies we look for, at least we're told to look for, whether it's the CDC, the World Health Organization, all these alphabet soup agencies that I guess we just assume are authoritative and trustworthy, where we should repose our trust. You just, you know, a little scrutiny, a little a little investigation. They're just controlled by people like Bill Gates.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it's like there was an atheist some months ago who literally said to me, well, truth is just whatever the majority of scientists say it is. He literally said that's what truth is. Truth is just simply whatever the collective majority of the scientists say it is. So that's the scary part, is about half the population literally believes things that foolish.
Well,
and that's their army.
He turned around and tell you that philosophy is a waste of time. You know.
Well, yeah, sure. But I mean, he's doing philosophy and doing that. So, but
yeah,
who
yeah.
cares about being consistent? We can be contradictory. We just have to love Big Brother.
Well, because truth is the opinion of the powerful. You know.
Right.
We're back to that.
It's whatever the party says it is at that moment, by the way, it could change tomorrow. So,
this is sort of the bitter fruit of, you know, 50, 60 years of our corrupt education system.
Right.
Which is now just sort of reaching its reductio ad absurdum, you know, with the current, you know, education system, which was ironically shut down, of course. But then they put everyone online, you know, remote education, they called it.
Well, yeah, in a few years, Klaus says that Jacques Attali says that basically the robot, the house bots will do all education. They'll raise your kids. So there will actually be, you know, home assistants, right? Much more sophisticated than Alexa. And they're going to determine the information that comes into your house. And that's the scary part. So, you know, right now, you know, you can still get on the internet, look up things that you want to look at, but it won't be like that in 20 years. It'll be a home assistant bot that's in charge of telling you what is in the external world.
Yeah, they'll probably create a situation like that by pulling off a terrorist attack, a domestic extremist or something. Already we're seeing talk about that, you know, supposed white.
They'll restructure the internet to where it's, you know, access is a privilege, and to have that in your house, right, you will require this sort of home assistant bot, and it will police you and it will, you know, run everything.
Yeah, and we got a taste of that with, you know, the past couple of years with the censorship occurring on social media. Of course, social media itself was ruined the internet, because before that, when it was anonymous, you didn't have this phenomenon of, you know, sort of people getting, being friended or being raided, or because it's anonymous, it doesn't matter. But social media, I remember when you used to be able to go on and it was completely anonymous, you know, and you could comment. You could post anonymous quotes and these things, but then they started signing on. You get everyone kind of used to that, where everything was traceable.
Yeah, so it was transferred over into a gigantic tracking and data harvesting operation.
Which goes back to sort of the Macy Conference, Norbert Wiener and cybernetics.
Right.
The personal computer. You know, you remember it was a lot of people talked about this was a liberating force, but it turns out, you know, just like the internet, what had liberating aspects to it, but ultimately it was to get everyone online connected and therefore monitored and controlled. And,
And ultimately to create the golem. In fact, that's literally what Attali says. He says that by 2050, everybody will be wired and hooked into the golem.
And if you doubt this, I mean, you mentioned Andrew Marshall. He was, wasn't his nickname Yoda or something?
Yes.
Yeah, the Yoda. He's this old,
yeah,
this theoretician.
Or whatever, yeah.
He's talking about, you know, what you mentioned earlier in our talk about how
Die Hard, yeah, that movie's based on his essays, yeah.
How, so they're seeing this system, this sort of internet-connected, Internet of Things system. He's looking into the future, and he's saying that it can be brought down. Now, obviously, it doesn't take much imagination to say if you're creating a system like that, it's very vulnerable. And so you would want to avoid that. And whatever benefits you may have by integrating it and digitizing everything be lost by the risk involved. So perhaps just in the interest of security and ultimately efficiency, you wouldn't want to do this, or you'd create measures to protect against it. But he's writing in a way, this is predicted in a way that they want this to occur so they can bring everything down and control everything.
Well, right. The vulnerabilities are planned.
Yeah.
They're on purpose so that the system can be fragile and shut off when the shadow elite want it to be shut off.
Yeah. Sorry. So when Klaus Schwab talks about this, the cyber attack that's coming, we've been warning about it. You know, the question should be if they're, you know, this guy who presumes to be dictate to the world, of course, he has no real power. He's representing these interests. He's just sort of a Blofeld character they put out there.
Yeah, exactly.
For our, you know, sort of to humiliate us or for our entertainment, I suppose. You do a much better impersonation than I do. But he's saying all these things. The question should be, he says, what, you didn't foresee any of this? So if you didn't foresee any of this, why should we let you be the person or the people to design the new system?
You know, well, that, like, remember at 9/11, it was the same thing. It,
yeah,
was like we've had failures in the intelligence community, and you know, it's, if you read any exposés, they'll often point out that the greatest hits of the intelligence community have been their greatest failures because it allowed for them to get the greatest funding ever.
Yes, yeah, like 9/11 or
exactly,
or Pearl Harbor, or, right, you know. So
we had a huge intelligence failure. Please give us $17 trillion now. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. Please save us.
And, you know, now we're hearing talks about, you know, the biggest threat, although as our cities have burned because of Antifa and Black Lives Matter and explosion and black crime because of the police stand down and just the overall environment encouraging the media, we're being told that the biggest threat are white terrorists, white supremacists, you know, basically 62% of the country, the population, by Merrick Garland, who as a U.S. attorney in the Clinton administration played a pivotal role in covering up the true nature of the Oklahoma City attack. So, you know, shut down any investigation.
The easy, you want to just look into how COINTEL and different groups are controlled and created and co-opted, mm-hmm. and you will understand all of this.
Yeah, look up PatCon and FBI.
Yeah, exactly.
And what was that book I read? It was called, was it Strange? Was it Derangement in the Heartland or something by Timothy McVeigh? It's a very good book. It gets into McVeigh himself and that whole era. What's called something Derangement in the Heartland, I think.
I don't know about that. Is you're saying it's about how that was all engineered or something?
Written by she was a consultant in the documentary A Noble Lie.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with the documentary.
A lot of
yeah,
her research.
I know about, you know, OKC was just an earlier 9/11.
Yeah, but and so
it used these, you know, FBI created, you know, Elohim City.
Elohim City, all these assets, West German German intelligence, yeah, under Strassmeier.
Yeah.
But the idea of again, a lot of these groups, whether it's the Aryan Front or Aryan Nation or these gangs, they are assets of intelligence agencies, of the FBI, of the U.S. military. Yes, you know,
they absolutely are. And they, I don't know if you heard it recent, William Ramsey recently did an analysis of the Order of Nine Angles, which is clearly another one of these, you know, Fed type groups. And,
yeah, he sent me his book. I have to go through that because I think he wants to do an interview on that. That's that looked interesting.
Yeah, and they have it's a similar pattern of this figure, David Myatt, who was clearly some kind of British intelligence operative who, you know, went into this, whatever this is. It's just totally obvious red flags. But, yeah, that's another example of this model of these kind of cults and groups that can be, you know, provocateured into this stuff. And we've seen this over and over and over. This is essentially what they do nonstop.
Another crisis. Remember, it was like terrorism and it was terror in the heartland.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
Yeah. And it's never, and this is the kind of the price we pay for never really demanding answers, because some of the questions are obvious, like, you know, was it like three dozen videotapes failing simultaneously around the Mirror building?
Well, but I mean, you know, these are the same people that lost all the footage of the most important event in history of the moon landing, right?
Yeah.
We lost all that. We recorded over those Betamax tapes.
It wasn't important. No. Just go watch Apollo 13. It's a good movie.
Yeah. It's pretty much like that, right?
Maybe it's the special maybe effects are better in that version. So okay, Jay, I said I had you for an hour and a half. We're coming up on that. Okay. Anything else? I think we kind of covered it.
Yep. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me back.
So and should we look for anything on your end coming out or other?
Just the standard rollout.
Okay. So go to Jay's Analysis.
I'm over on Rockfin now, which is another good platform. And So a lot of my content's being transferred over there, and they have a pretty good track record so far of, paying their creators and supporting free speech. So at least we're seeing, entities like that pop up to try to counteract, the big tech to the censorship.
Yeah, so you're able to keep the lights on then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good. So go to Jay's Analysis, subscribe for $4.95 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was still promoting the website for sure. So and you can find all my stuff there.
Are you still signing the books?
I am.
Yeah. So you can buy a book and you get a signed copy directly from Jay's Analysis.
Yeah, and I'm working on a couple new books. It's slow going though, so. But hopefully I'll have those up soon in the next 6 months to a year, hopefully.
Okay, well, great, Jay. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Well, thank you.
Go nurse that toe. Don't let it get infected.
All right, thank you. Have a good night.
And enjoy the summer. I'll be in touch and take care.
All right, bye, Tim.
Good night. Bye-bye.
The Village Green Preservation Society. God save the duck, Bonneville and variety. We are the Desperate Dan Appreciation Society. God save strawberry jam and all the different varieties. Serving the old ways from being abused. Protecting the new ways for me and for you. What more can we do? We are the Draft Beer Preservation Society. God save Mrs. Moss and good old Mother Riley. We are the Custard Pie Appreciation Consortium. God save the George Cross and all those who are loving them. Sherlock Holmes, English-speaking vernacular. Help save Fu Manchu, Moriarty and Dracula. We are the office block, persecution affinity. God save little shops, China cups and virginity. We are the skyscraper, condemnation affiliates. God save Tudor houses, anti-tables and millions. Serving the old ways from being abused. Protecting the new ways for me and for you. What more can we do? We are the Village Green Preservation Society. God save Donald Duck, Bonneville and Variety. We are the Desperate Dan Appreciation Society. God save strawberry jam. All the different varieties. We are the Village Green Preservation Society. God save Donald Duck for the Village variety. We are the Village Green Preservation Society. God save Donald Duck.